I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
Oh, hell yes. That's what it feels like. It's Friday. Happy weekend, almost. Almost weekend. Bill Ryder with you on this fine morning. Coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you want the ability to adjust your loan options in real time, Rocket can. Fun show planned today. Phone number 855-212-4CBS. We've got Bum of the Week, as we always do at the end of the program, right around 8:20 Pacific, 11:20 to you on East Coast time. If you want to nominate some of those folks who have been absolute bums over the course this week, you can use the phone number, 855-212-4CBS. You can hit me up on the old Twitter, SportsWriter, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. If you feel like he'll make a better sales pitch, you want an ambassador, the executive producer, Tom DiBenedetto, producer underscore Tom. Udonis Haslem came back from an absence and promptly was kicked out of the game. 3 minutes. I've been to Conor McGregor fights that lasted a lot longer than that. But man, what a reminder that UD is actually a tough guy. And what is the opposite of a tough guy? Whatever that is, whether that term is allowed to go over the airwaves or not, that's what Dwight Howard is. He used to call him the biggest waste of talent in the NBA, but I have a much worth expression in my brain right now. MLB power rankings, we skipped yesterday. We got into some stuff. We'll try to do it at the end of the segment. My buddy from The Athletic, very talented NBA national writer, Sam Amick, is going to join me on the program. We'll do buy or sell like we always do. And Patriots Bucks, and I get it. What is that, week five of this upcoming regular season? That week four game, tickets are approaching Super Bowl levels. We're gonna hit it. I'm also just going to ask Bogish and Tom and you, and again, 855-212-4CBS, what is the most you have and the most you would pay to go to a sporting event? I've got a pretty interesting answer, and I'm one of those spoiled guys who gets to go to most things for free under the guise of work. I mean, $1,400 for terrible tickets is interesting. It also could be a moment. Tom Brady is likely to be on pace for, and may very well in that game, become the all-time leading passer. What a, man, you better believe those tickets will go up. What a deal. But let's start here on a beautiful Friday in L.A. As summer approaches and it's spring in America. In fact, let me say this. I want to hit some NBA. I mean, what a great conclusion to the regular season. The games actually matter. I watched a Suns Trailblazers game on edge last night. Who really cares a year ago? Oh my God, the Trailblazers could fall to 7 or 6. Who gives a damn? Well, you care now with the play-in. I know the NBA is freaking terrified that the Lakers are going to fall in that 7 slot. They don't want to risk not having the ratings that come with the Lakers not being in a best-of-7 series, and I get it. And Lakers-Suns or Lakers-Jazz in the first round would be great, but It feels even more dramatic, doesn't it? Because the Lakers and the Warriors are in the play-in. And we're not talking much about, oh my God, Boston and Charlotte. What's that matchup going to be like? All the drama, all the relevance of these last few games of the NBA season is a credit to the NBA taking something that was broken and having the guts and the boldness to try something new. The Miami Heat over Philly didn't just tell us, I think, important things about each of those teams, potentially, but the game mattered. The game was intense. You can't tell me that a year ago, even if the Knicks had been what they are, which is relevant, that's a good basketball team, that you would have cared about Knicks Spurs, even if the Spurs were the seventh seed, which they're not. Spurs need to win those games. They're almost certainly, the Spurs are almost certainly going to be that 10 seed and get into that play-in. Probably against Memphis, could be the Warriors. But man, that game felt like it was something. And then you had Suns Portland. And a couple of takeaways, right? Because one of the things that I love about playoff basketball, we always talk about the sense of urgency in the playoffs and how the regular season doesn't feel like it means anything. Now, it does now with this situation, but it often does not. But the meaning that we are deprived of in the NBA in the regular season isn't just, gee golly, this game isn't really significant. The thing that makes playoff basketball, I think, remarkably meaningful for me is not just the intensity and the fear and the angst of a season on the line, and that's certainly part of it, but the historical realities, the legacies, the way we're going to remember players, those are the things that come to the forefront in playoff basketball. I can remember watching, and I'm not always right on this stuff, but I can remember being at, right, covering the Heat and how they couldn't put the Spurs down that second opportunity, that year where the Heat went out, the literal Heat went out, and the figure, and the, I guess literal in both cases, and the actual air conditioning went out and the Heat came on. I was at that arena. Oh my God, I've never sweat so much in my life. Well, yesterday, tennis against my buddy, haven't had too much to drink the night before. So maybe a comparable level of sweating. And when the Heat lost that game, you got a sense of two things, one that proved to be false and one that proved to be true, but it was the gravitational pull, the magneticism of history in these moments, right, of many years of what matters encapsulated in 48 minutes of basketball, in playoff basketball, in that case in finals basketball. Thing number one that proved to be true, felt like LeBron was not going to be a member of the Heat. And back then, after those 4 years in Miami, that wasn't a sure thing. People thought he was going to stay. I kind of knew he was going to go to Cleveland, but because some people had sort of clued me in. But most people thought, probably Miami. And the second thing that proved to be false, but felt like it at the time, and because I'm me, I was standing next to one of LeBron's guys, and I turned to him and said, yeah, I feel like the whole gold thing's over. And the guy gave me that look, you know, where he just like, now is the time you want to do it? Like, you want this conversation right now? I was going to use the analogy, you just wake up and your wife, because it happens to me constantly, like you haven't had coffee, you're on 3 hours sleep, it's your weekend, you stumble in, right? You're just like, mm-hmm. And your wife wants to have a conversation about whether or not, which bed sheets we should buy, and can we order them now on Amazon? No. But the better comparison would be like, you know, your buddy walks in on his wife doing something she shouldn't with, you know, I don't know, the mailman, and you just like pop out of the closet and you're like, is this a bad moment? You want to hang out? Want to get a beer? What's going on? LeBron's guy was not happy. And it proved not to be true, but the intensity of those moments puts a spotlight and a focus. I think it refines and it clarifies for us what matters. And some of that was going on last night. I was struck by a couple things, one short-term, one long-term, and maybe they'll both prove to be false. I think at least one of the two will be true. First thing, it is damn hard to win an NBA championship. The expression in sports that we use, and it's true, is that the hardest individual thing to do in professional sports is to hit a baseball. And I'm not just talking about Todd Frazier. It's a little shot there just because he's taking shots at the media. But I enjoyed it. It felt good. But I think the hardest thing to do in team sports is to win an NBA championship. You could make the case for baseball, but I mean as a star who can impact the outcome. Because the reality is, as hard as it is to win a Super Bowl, and as much as Tom Brady is dominated, there is built into the system a level of parity that allows an Eli Manning to be a Super Bowl champion, that allows a hopeless Chiefs organization that had not won a playoff game in a generation until a few years ago to not just be Super Bowl champions, but to have made back-to-back Super Bowls and to be the favorites to do it again in the AFC. I mean, I can go down the list. Even the Royals won a World Series in the lifetime now of most of its fans recently. But Dame Lillard and Chris Paul battling each other. It was a great Portland Suns game if you didn't watch it. Matters. Suns technically have a shot still at that one seed. And Portland, while they're pretty well locked into the five or the six, because again, don't want to play in the seven. It becomes a one-game play-in that can then boot you to another one-game play-in that can eliminate you. Is it confusing? Yes. Is it a bad idea? Is it a bad deal if you're the seven or eight? Hell yes. Great game. Great battle. Suns were the better team for stretches. Portland was the better team for stretches. It's like a heavyweight fight. It felt like a playoff. It felt like, I think, those playing games are going to feel like it. There was so much intensity just crammed into one game. And Chris Paul, who I have a complicated history with, and by the way, I'm just going to tell you now, he's going to go on my MVP ballot, I think. Just watching the game, I was like, how can he not? Because he set up other guys. He hit a huge shot in the fourth quarter that was just money with a hand in his face, the things that he does. And CJ McCollum was incredible, especially in the first half for Portland. And Dame hit some big shots. And the game, the way that it ended kind of, it sucked if you didn't see it. Carmelo, I've never thought I would say the following words. I mean, this is a remark. Carmelo Anthony made an amazing defensive play at the end of the game that resulted in a turnover. Did you hear what I just said? I mean, if we're not in the darkest timeline, we're definitely in the weirdest timeline. Melo, defensive player of the week. What did you say out loud? Are you day drinking again, Ryder? No, it happened. But the way the game concluded was a garbage foul call against, it was garbage against the Blazers on Devin Booker, sending Devin Booker to the line for two to win the game. And I saw it right in real time, and it didn't look like a foul, and I thought you got a challenge. And Terry Stotts does, but it eliminates the ability to advance the ball with, I think, 2.5 seconds left if Booker hits both free throws, which, by the way, he did. Which, again, extrapolating, one of the concerns about the Suns is, do these guys have the guts to in the moment, what feels like a playoff game, be great? We know Chris Paul does. Does this young core sure look like it? No DeAndre Ayton either for the first time this year. A little knee soreness. Hopefully it's nothing. And they still battled and won. And it was Booker who had the guts to take that shot and hit those free throws. But it was not a foul. Do the officials understand that when you challenge the call, you're not challenging the masculinity of the official, right? Do these thin-skinned officials understand that it's not an official challenge of you as a man? It's a different thing. You take that up in your marriage or your social life. Like, don't bring it to the arena, please. Terrible call. Not even the original call. Bang, bang, play. Those things happen. But that's why there's a challenge system. And so there's implications, right? It opens the door for Portland to fall. It does. It creates the unlikely. I mean, they have Denver. They have Denver left. They could certainly lose that game. And some other machinations and things could happen. And the Lakers don't have a ridiculously difficult schedule going forward. But the big takeaway for me was how great Damian Lillard and Chris Paul are. How great they are as individuals. How they rise to the moments that matter. How they make their teammates markedly better. Caveat, asterisk, for Chris Paul. Went in the right spot. DeAndre Ayton wasn't out there, but I told you at the start of the year he was going to have a much better season because Chris Paul on the pick and roll with Ayton and just the ability for DeAndre Ayton not to have to be that, what, even second best player on the team? He may not even be the third best player on the team, which makes him more impactful because he's not trying as hard. All the Devin Booker and the freedom to take over a game but not to have to, which means defenses can't just, on the young guy, double him up because Chris Paul will do what he did on that shot where he rolled right to the free throw line and just knocked down a shot. Chris Paul's an amazing Hall of Fame player. And look, I don't like Chris Paul personally, but who cares? I also think he's the best true point guard since Isaiah Thomas, which with the understanding that there are no point guards anymore, not really. I mean, LeBron's a point guard god, blah, blah, blah. He is better than Steve Nash, better than John Stockton. I think Isaiah Thomas is better than John Stockton. I'm just going to go there. Dude won back-to-back NBA championships in the middle of the Jordan Bird Magic era. Never gets the credit he deserves. I digress. And Damian Lillard, I mean, that guy, Damian Lillard, single-handedly ended that whole Paul George, Oklahoma City Thunder, Westbrook thing. Just like, you're done, you're gone, bye-bye. He wasn't waving bye to the team that year. He was waving bye to the team forever. Because in the playoffs and now in the play-in, things that matter, things that shape the league occur. But the deal is this, it's almost certain, and maybe the Suns this year. And I suppose Damian Lillard could force his way to the Knicks and Magic could happen, but it's almost certain that Damian Lillard and Chris Paul will end their careers without an NBA championship. It's very unlikely they're both going to get one. And because last night's game felt like a playoff game, that reality struck me, how freaking hard it is to win an NBA championship if you're a star in the NBA and you don't pull a Kevin Durant. You want to take the shortcut? Fine. Still hard, by the way. And then the other takeaway, maybe we'll carry this over, is how much the Heat, and I've heard this from GMs around, this isn't me, I'm parodying people who are better at this than I am, right? Pretty good at talking hoops, no hoops. But that is because I talk to people who actually do it for a living again and again and again. One thing I heard a month ago, 3 weeks ago, and I think I talked about on the air, people were a little incredulous over at the website, where CBSSports.com, where I write, that they included the Heat as one of the, you know, four, five, six teams that could make an NBA Finals. People rolled their eyes. Saw it last night. When they get some help from a third player, especially a scorer like Tyler Hero, when Jimmy Butler's on the floor, period, when Bam is Bam, when that defensive energy and effort that has always defined Eric Spoelstra / Pat Riley teams is out there with some of that offensive help, they could beat anybody. They beat up. I mean, they just destroyed the Sixers. And wisely, again, not words I speak often, wisely, Doc Rivers sat his guys in the fourth quarter, right? You got to throw up the white flag. We surrender, we're done. But you saw there that Philly isn't a sure thing in the East, even if they're surely the best team in the Eastern Conference as it relates to record. And it's absolutely true that the Miami Heat, I was wrong last year. I don't think Miami's good enough to win three series. They shouldn't, right? But I think they can win two. Doesn't mean they will. Just think they can. And they can certainly push somebody in a third series. But the problem with the Miami Heat, if you're any other team, is they have a level of belief. I mean, I can't remember a team that's made the NBA Finals, returns the next year, has basically the same team, and nobody takes them seriously. That Dallas Mavericks team that beat the Heat years ago, that Mark Cuban broke that thing up. I don't know if he was busy on Shark Tank or what was going on. Was he on Shark Tank then? This is the same Heat team. So they get some momentum. They're going to be really good. Watch some basketball this weekend. It feels like the playoffs, and it's pretty freaking exciting. 855-212-4CBS if you want to give us a call. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. What is the most, I feel like I'm mean to rich people. And I do want to apologize to them. I feel like a lot of times I just talk about all the rich neighbors that I have. And that's not fair. It's the obnoxious rich neighbors I don't like. But if you're a super rich person, this doesn't count. You got to like call in before you got. If you're going to call in at 855-212-4CBS to answer this question, it's before you were super rich. If you're rich, just sit it out. But I want to know the most money you have, the most money you would spend on a sporting event. If you have $30 million, I don't care that you spent $10,000 on a Super Bowl ticket. If, like most of us, you make a nice American middle-class living, I'm interested. 855-212-4CBS. I'm going to ask Bogish. I'm going to ask Tom. I'll tell you my story. Patriots-Bucks. Those tickets are going through the roof, man. It's like Bitcoin. I wish I'd invested early. We'll talk NBA, NFL, MLB, pricing decisions. Would you cough up $3,000 for the ultimate sporting experience? I don't know if I would. We'll get into it. Next year on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
Oh, welcome back into the show. Happy Friday. Bill Ryder with you. It is expensive to take your kids to a baseball game. Expensive to take your kids to an NBA game, NFL game. It's not, and I'm just talking a regular experience. And I'm thinking about this Bucks-Patriots game that's going to be in week four, where not only is Brady returned to the hallowed grounds that he made holy in a football sense, but he could become the all-time leading passer at Foxborough, which is insanity. And tickets are the worst tickets in the house. And having been to Gillette Stadium a few times, the bad seats are bad there. That is not the SoFi Stadium that I flew over when I returned from LAX a few nights ago. It's not a spaceship that's landed and poses at an NFL stadium. And those tickets are $1,400, $1,600 right now. And we'll see what the market dictates. They're probably going to go way the hell up. I mean, it's May. And not only are they going to go up because it's of the storyline and the drama and the record, but there is going to be a roaring 20s sense of, oh my God, we're back to real life. Let's go. And it just had me thinking about what would I pay? What kind of money would I pay to go to a sporting event? And there's probably a suppressed market for someone like me because I do get to go to sporting events to cover them for free, right? So I'm that obnoxious D-bag sometimes who says, I don't want to go to the Super Bowl. I want to fly home the day before and watch it on my TV and eat chicken wings because I've just been to so many. It's obnoxious. You know, what's the expression? Somebody somewhere is tired of going to the Super Bowl. That's not the expression. But you get my drift. But when the Cubs made the World Series in 2016, I made the decision, lifelong Cubs fan, that I was gonna go to a World Series game. I was gonna go. And I wasn't gonna risk trying to see if there was a game 6 or 7 or right. I was just gonna go to one of the first four games. And I was gonna totally just blow my budget. And the number I came up with, and it actually feels obnoxious to say out loud, it's such a dumb amount of money. But I would have spent $1,000 on a terrible ticket and I don't even know if that would have got me in. But I think it would have. And I got really lucky. I had just left Fox Sports 1 to do this job. And when you leave a company normally, right, that's treated you well, and you just said, thank you, but I have another opportunity, when you have a chance to stay, sometimes they're not real nice about it. And FS1 was so gracious. And I bumped into this executive at actually a Dodgers game, at an opening round Dodgers playoff game. And long story short, FS1 gave me 4 tickets. I had to pay face value, but 4 tickets to every Cubs playoff game the rest of the way through. I took cousins to the World Series. I got really lucky. So I didn't have to sort of cross that threshold. And then I would not pay $1,000, but I would spend, that's not true. I would spend probably $1,000 to take my 2 children and I to a Barcelona football game in Barcelona. And unfortunately, that's probably what it's going to cost me. That's kind of my threshold. I know people who live in my neighborhood who have spent more than $10,000 on good Super Bowl tickets. And I know people that have spent exorbitant amounts of money trying to go to the Masters. I don't know if they were successful. It's a hard ticket to get. Tom DiBenedetto, what is your... So I guess it's the same answer. I would spend $1,000. That's the amount. That's what I would spend. And I almost spent $1,000, but didn't have to. Because of what I do for them, I'm very, very lucky. But I wouldn't spend $1,500 to go watch Tom Brady. I just wouldn't do it.
No, I wouldn't either. I think the biggest opportunity, luckily I had a media pass for the entire Stanley Cup playoffs in that season, but the Rangers Stanley Cup run, I think I would have paid $500 for a ticket to get into the Garden, even standing, to be at a Stanley Cup game. Now, luckily, I went to the whole series, and it was amazing, but I didn't have to pay for it. I think the most I've ever actually paid, I'm a little bit ashamed, it was only 5 years ago, I'm a little ashamed I don't specifically remember, but I think I paid $185 before fees for a standing room only ticket to the 2016 NL Wild Card that the Mets didn't score a run in and lost. And I think it came out to like $210. I actually think that's the most I've ever paid to get.
What's crazy is that is basically an NBA ticket if you don't want to be in the nosebleed. That is what it costs to go to an NBA game.
Right.
I mean, another ticket that I would have thought about spending money on, but it's almost like going to a freak show instead of a sporting event. I don't even know if it qualifies, is McGregor Mayweather when that happened, but I covered that and kind of knew up. But there was a chance. I've covered the UFC back in the day, and so they're good. They're good to me when I put in a credential request back before it blew up. But it was so dumb. It was so dumb, but it was also amazing. I mean, if I'm being honest, it's one of my 10 favorite sporting events. I mean, two of the 10 most amazing sporting events I've been to. If you don't go like the Cubs World Series is the whole experience, not every single game. But two of them are Conor McGregor fights. One was that, and the other was the McGregor-Diaz fight where McGregor won, which is the second one, I think, because Diaz came in as a late addition. And the first one, everyone thought McGregor would crush him because he was overweight. But that weight, McGregor couldn't take down. He hadn't trained properly. I mean, McGregor's a spectacle. He's not the obviously the fighter he used to be, but he's a. I mean, it's just. And when he was amazing, it was as entertaining as any sporting event I've ever been to.
I paid $50 just to watch that fight in a public place, and there were like over 1,000 people where I watched it. It was crazy. It
cost $50 at a New York bar?
Yeah, it was like a event. It was like a citywide event in Jersey City. It was like a whole thing. But yeah,
yeah, McGregor and the Diaz brothers, Nate and Nick, were both like. I mean, they're. I haven't been to a UFC fight, obviously, in a while, but I've been to a ton of them, and they're fun. And the thing about the UFC, and UFC fans know this, but if you're a casual fan, the thing about it is, A, if you go in Vegas, it's a joy to be a part of. But UFC fights are incredible because whatever the headliner is, it might draw you. But if you go for, let's say, because you can go all day, they have just a ladder of fights. There's fights that are 5 or 6 or 7 hours before the headliner. Sometimes there's 7 people there. But if you go for the last 7 or 8, the main card, you're going to have at least 2 fights that are just what boxing used to be, where it's just like you are riveted. I went to Mayweather Pacquiao, and it wasn't that good. It was okay. But the problem was I've been to so many UFC fights. I'm like, this is the biggest boxing match of a half decade or a decade. I went to Canelo Mayweather. UFC is amazing. I don't know how this became a commercial for Dana White to get richer, but it did. Andrew Bogus, what is your most expensive ticket you've ever purchased with your own money, and how high would you go and for what?
Yeah, I've been trying to think. I don't know what I paid a lot of money for, because the problem is, like, it's just a lot of money, period, to go to anything around New York. I mean, a Ranger ticket is like $90 a pop, and Met tickets aren't that cheap if you want to sit somewhere close-ish. I don't know what I paid a lot of money for, partly because, like Tom said, I mean, almost anything that I've wanted to go to in basically the last 2 decades, I've gone for work. Like, I was at the Subway Series in 2000 for work. I was at the same Ranger Stanley Cup for work. I was at Devil's King Stanley Cup with a pass. I went to the Super Bowl at the Meadowlands on a pass. So luckily, I haven't had to pay for anything in a really, really long time. But the only 2 things that I would pay real money for would be Game 7 World Series at Citi Field or Game 7 at the Garden for the Rangers to win a Stanley Cup. Anything else is just, to me, not worth it. But seeing your team... But seeing your team win is the ultimate. So I'd probably pay, like, to bring somebody with me. I might pay like $3,000 to get in a building for one of those 2 things.
Yeah, no, I'm with, and having been at Cubs Indians the whole way through, and Game 7 was obviously in Cleveland, and I was working. But that is one of the most, outside of the birth of my children and getting married to my wife, and meeting you, Andrew. That is one of the most emotionally overwhelming moments of my life is the Cup. All right, so let me ask you this. I think you've already answered it, but let's say, because the way it usually works, you can get credentialed in your hometown or organizations you've spent some time around, right? Like the UFC will credential me, but hockey, they'll be like, who the hell is Bill Ryder? Let's say that the Mets played the Red Sox in Game 7 of a World Series. You had the day off, not that far, but you couldn't get credentialed. The Red Sox said no. How much money would you spend for a single ticket, just for you, to go watch the Mets play at Fenway? Because if I hadn't seen the Cubs in the equivalent scenario, Cubs at Fenway, say, I would.
Right.
I feel obnoxious. I'd probably spend $2,000 or $3,000, which is so dumb, but I would probably do it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really annoyingly frugal, and I'm maybe even cheap. So like, there'd be a really strong push not to go. I probably could talk myself up to $2,000, but after that, it's a lot.
I mean, I am so cheap that I'm wearing a Shaq shirt that I wear once a week, and I'm not even a Shaq fan, and I don't believe in wearing shirts that have people's names on them because Shaq sent it to me after I interviewed him on CBS Sports HQ. I am with you on the cheapness. I'm wearing shoes right now that have holes in them. That wouldn't, I mean, what does it cost to buy a pair of Adidas? Like $110?
Yeah, you're cheaper than me.
Oh, I'm so cheap. Not even cheap. I just like, It's like, I don't care. I've had buddies be like, bro, if you just dressed up, you, I'm like, dude, I'm married. What do you, who, I'm going to impress you? I'm going to impress you, you rich Manhattan Beach metrosexual. I don't, go do some more push-ups. Let's stop it. But being cheap means I've got I don't spend money on stuff. So every now and then I'm like, I'm going to splurge. And I've also spent, if I'm being super honest, I mean, I've spent as much as $5,000 on a World Series of Poker buy-in. Right? I mean, I've spent, but that feels different because I have a bankroll and I used to play. I didn't do $5,000. Excuse me. I did the $2,500. There's a potential return on investment. What about you and I going together? Then you'd spend 10? You can hang out with me?
I mean, at least. But for now, I'm just happy I know what that shirt actually says now, because normally only HA is visible on my end. So, so it says Shaq, huh? There's an S and a Q missing on
I
that?
I do it this way with the hoodie. By the way, I'm also wearing a CBS Sports hoodie. Everything I'm wearing. I got these shoes. Somebody sent me these shoes. I mean, I'm everything. The only thing that I'm wearing that I paid for are the boxers. That's the only thing.
I can't believe.
I'm not taking free boxers. That's probably draw the line there.
Can't believe Brooklyn Decker let you in her house to then fart on her.
Should have seen it coming, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, really.
That's on
it's
her,
almost
man.
Her fault.
That's on her. My God. Should we see what Allen, you guys want to see what Allen paid for his most expensive ticket?
Sure.
Let's go to Allen in Chicago. Allen, what up, dude? You're on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What's good?
Well, to answer the question really quick, most I've ever spent was $500, and those were for terrace reserves to the Cubs World Series.
You got them for $500?
For a terrace reserve.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
Did you?
Because as I was mentioning before, it all depends on who you know, right? Sometimes it's not what you know, it's who you know. So I worked in the hotel industry my entire life. So, you know, I knew all these traveling secretaries. I knew a couple of the big ticket brokers in Chicago who are still friends of mine that, you know, they give me stuff at their cost because they just wanted to take care of me, maybe and another buddy. So, I enjoyed it. They did lose the game, but I don't give a shit because I was at, sorry, I was at the...
855-212-4CBS is the phone number. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. I am lucky. I mean, I'll say this, and we all are, to do what we do for a living and to have the opportunity to go to this stuff is pretty. And I don't know about you, Andrew. I take it for granted, and I try not to. I live near the ocean, and for the first 3 years that I lived in Manhattan Beach, I was in awe of the ocean every day because I didn't see the ocean until I was 20-year-old guy. I mean, I was a Midwestern kid, never traveled to the coast. And now I take it for granted. When I came back from New York, I drove down to the water and I was mesmerized again by it. And it made me just realize all the stuff that I'm so lucky, including going to sport. I got to appreciate going to sporting events. I just got to stop being the guy. I think I've skipped. In fact, I know that I've skipped two or the last three Super Bowls. I just haven't gone, even though I could. I was just like, I flew home on Saturday, which is dumb. Because I've been to so many of them. Like, oh, I already seen the Giants beat the Patriots a couple times. I'm over it. That's it. That's all I got.
I mean, it's good. That's the way it should be. You should appreciate. You shouldn't brag about it. You should know that, you know. But you've also earned your ability to beat all those things, too.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes when you're lucky, you got to just remember how lucky you are, right? I mean, I've been to, other than the Masters is the one thing. You guys want me to call up my employer? I'm going to call my employer a little bit. You guys, I'm going to do it. I have a contract, and I never ask for anything in my contracts that's excessive. I don't care. I just thank you for paying me money. But I did when I started at CBSSports.com. have them put in the deal that I would go to the Masters because I know how hard it is to get a ticket. And they're like, absolutely. And I'm just going to tell you, I have not been to the Masters.
Wow.
I mean, so if I was like, it's in my contract, I'm sure they'd have to. But like, they're just like, yeah, it's not going to work this year. Okay.
Yeah, you got to make a stand next year.
Yeah, I think we'll just figure out the year that's the last year ever for me, and then we'll just make a stand like that. That's when we'll make a stand. All right, 855-212-4CBS. Mr. Bogish, what's going on, dude? What's going on out there?
Let's begin with those Heat, who you mentioned a few moments ago. They took it to the Sixers last night in Miami.
Out to Duncan Robinson. Step back to Hero. Straight on for three. Got it to go. That's great passing. 11 points now in the Heat with their largest lead up by 22.
That's Mike Inglis on Heat Radio. Miami cruising to a 106-94 decision over Doc Rivers' team.
I mean, they just beat us every way. They're better prepared. They played harder. They were more into it. You can't get it back. So you
his Sixers
on.
Lead on the Nets for number one in the East is down to just a game, but Philly just needs one more win to clinch. The Heat remain fifth in the East, half game behind the Hawks, who took care of the Magic 116-93. And the Knicks stay in the sixth spot after a 102-98 home win over the Spurs. They get the final spot in the West play-in because the Kings lost in Memphis 116-110. Sacramento has now gone 15 seasons without the playoffs, matching the Clippers of 77 through 91 for the longest drought ever. Alex Rodriguez and business partner Mark Lohr reportedly have a verbal agreement now to buy the T-Wolves for $1.5 billion. Baseball last night, the Rays beat the Yankees 9-1 as the Red Sox were beating the A's 8-1. Tampa Bay and Boston avoiding three-game sweeps. The Rockies topped the Reds 13-8 after leading 10-0, and the Giants beat the Pirates 3-1. They're an NL best 23-14. The Colorado Avalanche claiming home ice throughout the playoffs with last night's 5-1 win in L.A. And we check quickly, round two, the Byron Nelson Classic, Wyndham Clark in the lead at 11 under par, one shot better than Jordan Spieth, who is one under through nine holes today. Bill, back to you.
Mr. Bogus, thank you. A bunch of you calling in, 855-212-4CBS. John, Joe, the rest of you, will get to your calls, your stories on the most you've spent on a ticket. Bogus, let me ask you this question very, very quickly. I was listening to the update. Captivated by A-Rod, Timberwolves, $1.5 billion. Who won the breakup? A-Rod because he owns an NBA team, or J-Lo because she gets to, you know, she's back with Ben Affleck? Who's the winner?
Well, I was going to say that Ben Affleck wins the breakup because he gets J-Lo back. I mean, that's the real winner here, isn't it?
What was that movie? Not Fargo. Argo. Fargo is a totally different movie. Was it Argo the name of the movie that he wrote and directed? So now he's an Academy Award winner a couple times over, and he's hanging with J-Lo.
Yeah.
He's the winner. A-Rod gets to move to Minneapolis. So
without
that's
a
nice, nice little consolation prize. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. I'm serious. It's a cool city. We'll take some phone calls, and we'll talk ticket prices next on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
So back into the show. Bill Ryder with you. 855-212-4CBS. Several of you want to talk about how much money you're willing to spend on sports. And sports ain't cheap, by the way. It's another thing. It's expensive to go to an NBA game. Baseball game. And I'll take my kids. I think it's just how I grew up, right? Cubs games. I think fathers should take sons and daughters to baseball games. I think it's part of that childhood experience. My kids love it. Have a hot dog, get some cotton candy. Wear your ball cap, bring your glove. I don't care. I bring my glove. I didn't do it last time. Something about it, but it ain't cheap. How much are you willing to spend? What would you go see? Let's get some stories. I like it when you guys call in. It's nice hanging out with you. John Lancaster, PA. What up, buddy? Happy Friday. You're on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, great show, dude.
Thanks, brother.
I work for a national facilities management company, so we get comps to all kinds of stadiums, but I had to trade every favor I ever had to get four tickets to see the Pope say mass at the Nats Stadium.
That's awesome. So you got the tickets. It was just political capital you had to spend.
Yeah. I mean, we could get tickets all the time. My kids are really spoiled because, you know, we had access like crazy, you know, we just kind of, you know, here we go and there we are. But yeah, I had worked the opening. I was there for like 2 weeks. I'd come in from out of town and they put me up in a hotel and we, you know, we did all the prep stuff to get the building open for the Nats opener. But after that, you know, they announced pretty quickly that they were going to get the Pope as well. So, you know, I just started cashing in stuff every which way and great seats, altar in center. We're a little left of the left field foul pole, right in the path of Pope Mobile as he went around the warning track.
Nice.
You know, super great stuff. The only thing that didn't work out, we tried to see if we could do jerseys and shirtsies that had Benedict and 16 on the back. The Vatican, I've done licensing with MLB, NHL, NFL, nothing like the Vatican trying to work a deal.
Spoken, and I say this as one, spoken like a true Catholic. I mean, you ain't wrong. Lori and I, my wife and I, we honeymooned in Rome in part to kind of get a glimpse of the dude. And we didn't, because we ended up spending a lot of time not at the Vatican, you know, drinking, hanging out, eating great food. But that's a combination, right? That's a sports thing and a non-sports thing rolled in together, right, all at once. I almost, when I was a reporter of the Kansas City Star, I called in all my favorites to go to the final Yankees game at the old Yankee Stadium. And apparently I didn't have enough political capital because my boss wouldn't let me go. And I was trying to cover it. I should have gone. Should have just flown my, like that. That's the other thing, is saying goodbye to history, I think, is something that matters and is would be a magical experience. I'm too young for this, but if you're a Lakers fan, you go to the final game at the Forum. Doesn't matter what's going on there. Right? You go. If you're a Yankees fan, that's where you spend, for me, where you spend your money. I don't even want to bring up Wrigley Field's going to be there forever. They've spent so much money renovating it. And B, it's going to be there forever because people, I wouldn't do that many crazy things. I might lock myself to Wrigley Field. Like if there's like a human beings are just locking themselves and getting arrested if they were going to try to tear, I'm in. Arrest me. Like, I mean, the cops are really going to, it feels like half the cops are like, good work. All right, random side story. We'll get to this call. One of my favorite moments of all time is when the first time they ever had interleague play between the Cubs and the Yankees. Cubs fans are so nice. Like, Cubs fans are so, like, relaxed. And this doesn't reflect all Yankees fans. I get it. But some Yankees fans who had come to Wrigley Field started pouring beer on the top onto people below. And then some other Yankee fans started cheering it on in front of us. And I've never seen this. I saw Cub fans just kick the crap out of Yankees fans. And then other Yankees fans got mad and tried to fight them. And some more Cubs fans. And then the cops kept coming and just arresting the Yankees fans who had been victimized by the Cubs fans. It was just a parade of Yankees fans bleeding. And it made me realize, man, these cops, they're not going to arrest me if I lock myself. They're going to arrest somebody who tries to stop me. They'll be my guard. Anyway, that was a random story. Never seen such kind people turn violent so quickly. There's nothing more chill in sports than going to a Cubs game. It's been part of the problem for years. People are like, oh, whatever, we'll have a beer, watch a lose, be great. Because Wrigley's amazing. All right, Joe in Florida, thanks for listening, buddy. You're on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, I just want to say I love the show. I try to listen every day while I'm at work, but I'm originally from Stamford, Connecticut, and I paid $450 to go see the Steelers and the Patriots. It was the Monday Night Football when they opened up the new stadium, Gillette.
That's a good one.
That was, yeah. And matter of fact, we sat four seats away from Tara Reid because she was dating Tom Brady at the time.
I mean, I would pay $900 for that if I had known that Tara Reid was going to be there just for the story. Joe, thanks for the call. Thanks for the kind words, man. Appreciate you. Thanks for letting us hang out with you while you're at work. Small world, by the way. I was in Stamford, Connecticut. I'm sitting here in L.A. I was in Stamford, Connecticut. I'm so turned around. 3 days ago? When my wonderful boss had me come up for lunch and then just announced we were going to New Haven to get all that pizza. I haven't had more than a meal, by the way. I'm not kidding. Since that, I've had a meal a day. So I'm still full from Pepe's and Sally's. And I went to John's. I think I had four pizzas in 36 hours in the New York City area. And they were so good. Sally's is like the movie Fargo. I hated Fargo when I went. I almost walked out. And then like 3 days later, I realized I'm dumb. And the Coen brothers are smart. I ate Sally's. My kid's pretty good. I like Pepe's better. And I keep thinking about that crust. I think I had a dream last night about charred Sally's crust. If you're listening outside of the New York area, and you're thinking what I always thought, which is this whole New York City and beyond pizza thing is a lie. It's not a lie, okay? It's not some radio host trying to pretend the Giants matter on June 1st. It's not, I promise. The pizza's actually really, really good. Like, it's life-changingly good. Here's the price I'd pay, and I already have a few. I would put on 40 pounds, just accept it. What is that, 11 years less life expectancy? If I knew I could just eat that pizza every day of my life, I'm in. Love my family, but they're just going to have to enjoy me while I'm around because I'm eating Sally's and Pepe's and John's. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. We didn't do MLB Power Rankings. We will talk to Sam Amick about the NBA next on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, good morning, Bill Ryder with you. Happy Friday, coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you want the ability to adjust your loan options in real time, Rocket can. Phone number on the program, 855-212-4CBS. Give us a call. Man, Sam Amick is so good at his job. Sam Amick, national NBA writer extraordinaire for The Athletic. I think this just dropped, actually. A great conversation piece. Some insight into Draymond Green. They hit a bunch of topics. And Sam, graciously making some time for us right now. Mr. Amick, what's up, buddy?
Mr. Ryder, good morning, my friend. How are you?
I'm good. I'm a little off today, Sam. I'm such a creature of habit, and it's so weird that I guess on Sunday night, you know, we're all going to start planning our summers and our work summers, and we're going to be doing NBA work, what, all the way through August, basically, right? It's hit me how late this season is right now.
Oh, for sure. I mean, the rhythm and the clock is off. you mentioned the Draymond interview. I was a little bit guilty in the top of the piece and kind of, you know, pulling out my little mini violin and complaining about how different our jobs are right now and how it was really refreshing to talk to Draymond because it's a one-on-one conversation but talking about how much I miss being in the building and being in the locker room and doing what we do. So very different. And like you said, it's going to be late into the summer and this is a whole different conversation, but you've got the Olympic question, you know, on the back end of the finals, you know, just absolutely back to back, which is going to be wild. So lots going on.
Sam Amick here on the show. Sam, you're based in the West Coast. You cover the whole country, but you've had a lot of time around the Warriors. You had this long conversation with Draymond. I know the road from here for Golden State to any kind of real competitive chance in the West playoffs. So that's a long and winding journey. But there's this sort of growing sense the last three or four days, a little buzz out there that maybe people are sleeping on the Warriors, maybe the Warriors, the way they've been playing, are dangerous. What do you think their legitimate upside is in this postseason?
I think, you know, if you put them up against a Phoenix or a Utah, I think more so Phoenix, you know, I wonder, I don't know, you know, could they shock the world? Maybe. You know, Phoenix has shown some vulnerability lately. Now, they've also been missing some key guys. Cam Johnson's been out, things like that. But and it's something where you and I have talked about Chris Paul a lot in our different conversations over the years. And on the one hand, Hall of Famer, incredible player, but, you know, we are now getting into that time of year where the spotlight is always brighter on Chris because he has not been able to achieve as much as he would have liked in the past. So on the one hand, he's a guy that you would – think would make the Suns as an elite top team kind of impervious to a team like the Warriors that just don't have as much talent or aren't as good. But, you know, I don't know. So the Warriors, I think no matter what they do in the postseason, what they're happy about already is that they got momentum again. They have the beginnings of something again, where if you add Clay to it next year, you know, that you could be back on your way. But I'm curious to see what they do.
Sam Amick here on the show. Sam, I've asked this of a lot of folks in the position that you and I are in, talking about writing about the NBA for a living, and I've gotten a range of answers. I'm very curious on yours. It's a Lakers and Nets question. Let's start with the Lakers. What do you think? I know there's a range of outcomes, but what is your sense of what you think the Lakers are about to do or not do over the course of the next few days, the next few weeks, the next few months?
You know, play this tape back if it blows up in my face, but I just, as of today, I feel like, you know, I don't know if it'll be deep in the playoffs, in the finals, whatever it might be. I'm not believing in this group to do it again. New faces, you know, new pieces, all the injuries. And I don't think, it's funny because I asked Draymond who he would pick to win the whole thing. And he basically picked Brooklyn and talked about how even though the three stars have only been together for seven games, that, you know, if anybody could kind of get over that, it would be those three guys. Well, it's the Lakers have two guys, and they have, you know, one guy in AD who's been up and down this year, really, really good lately. And LeBron, I don't know physically what we're going to be looking at there. So many question marks. You know, I'm not seeing them right now as the defending champs. And Brooklyn, I'm a little bit with Draymond. Could a Utah or Milwaukee or a Phoenix, you know, kind of win this whole thing? Of course. But Brooklyn's ability to be dominant, even when they had only two stars, is a pretty good sign of how incredible they can be. And so I think, you know, they could be the ones at the end of this thing.
Sam Amick here on the show. Yeah, and I find myself skeptical of both. But I was texting a Lakers person yesterday who was so overly confident that it's going to be, I think they went Nets in six over the Lakers in the finals. Was there, right? Very, it just feels like such an unlikelihood both those teams make it because it's been such a weird year. And I'm wondering, Sam, to what degree you think injuries and maybe even injuries that haven't occurred yet could play a role going forward the way they have certainly through this fairly injury-plagued regular season as it relates to star players.
Yeah, I mean, that part's been disappointing. I'm never one for the asterisk conversation in terms of different teams and players' achievements, but we also got to acknowledge the elephant in the room. Like, this year, the standings, you know, are a direct result, at least partly, of all these injuries to star players. It's been all year long. You know, Joel Embiid kind of fell down a bit in the MVP conversation because of his injuries. Damian Lillard missed some time. But, I mean, the teams at the end of the day that we know have the most talent have not been whole. And so LeBron is number one, and he's the guy that, I mean, you know as well as anybody, you covered him every day for a couple years, that his toughness and his ability to play through injury is pretty legendary. So the idea that he sat on the shelf for 26 games or whatever it was tells you everything you need to know. And coincidentally, that he's going to be ready in time for the playoffs, you know, like, well, he's obviously pushing himself. He pushed himself last week when he tried to come back and it didn't go very well. So he's number one. From there, I think about Harden's hamstring. You know, he's looked good coming back, but that's a tough injury and the kind of thing that could, you know, pop up again. Ask Chris Paul about that. I mean, he's had playoff runs short-circuited by a hammy. So yeah, left and right, the best players in the game are kind of hobbling. I think, you know, Bill, you could still have a perfect storm, though, from a rating standpoint, where, you know, now you have the Lakers coming up on the back end, you know, knocking off a number one or number two seed and having a lot of fun in the playoffs. So that part of it is going to be different. It could be fun.
Sam Amick here on the program. I'm Bill Ryder, Ryder Than You, CBS Sports Radio. Sam, it feels like if I wanted to, and you know I've never been a contrarian in my life, but if I wanted to be negative, I think you can make a case against Philly. You can make a case against Milwaukee. You can make a case against the Nets. I mean, I could literally go through all of the contenders and feel like there are some real question marks in each of these cases. Some injury, some of the history that they have in the postseason, some their ability to score, you know, in what is a different environment in the playoffs. To what degree do you think just the possible open nature of this year could impact the way fans view the sport, given it doesn't feel like there's going to be a coronation until there's an actual coronation? It feels different to me, Sam. I don't know if it does to you, that there's all these outcomes that are possible.
Yeah, I mean, and I think there's a threshold there for where it's good for interest. And I forget where I read this recently, but somebody made a point about if you use the NCAA comparison, and you know, the NBA would love to have a little bit of that March Madness kind of feel. That's partly the thinking behind the play-in tournament. But what this piece that I read had highlighted was the fact that it appears there's a threshold there. Like, people don't want, you know, the two Cinderella teams in a championship game that they stop watching. You need to have a Duke in there. You got to have, you know, a UConn in there. And so with the NBA, I think it's probably somewhat similar. Like, how people view a champion, you know, who knows? If it winds up being a Phoenix, how would people feel about that? Nobody saw that coming. But first of all, Bill, your promo said that you're nice and humble, which I wanted to give you a hard time about. So I don't know what you're talking about.
I am nice. After.
But I'm with you. It is weird. Maybe recency bias, but you can go through the whole standings and 100%, like, just say, here's why I don't believe in this team, this team, this team. I mean, I don't truly believe in any team right now. And the one that comes to mind that that also, you know, I don't totally believe in is the Clippers. Like, on paper, you look at them and you say they've had some continuity now. It's year two. You had the heartache of what happened against Denver last year. You should have grown from it. Ty Lue's done a nice job. You know, Paul George has been fantastic, and Kawhi's Kawhi, so it should be them, right? But, you know, I don't think believe in their fabric just yet. So I'm with you. It's going to be completely wide open.
Sammy McCure on the show. Sam, I know you're. I'm sure you're trying to figure out your ballot. Should Nate McMillan be considered at all for Coach of the Year? Is that crazy talk? Because I haven't been able to get my mind around it. Because how good Atlanta has been since he's taken over.
I mean, I think he deserves a lot of credit. It almost, this is a weird analogy, but it almost kind of reminds me of, like, Julius Randle's been so good this year, and people have been occasionally tempted to throw him into the MVP conversation. And I think I saw the jump the other day on ESPN, and our friend Rachel Nichols had pushed back on that and was like, well, can't we just give Julius some credit and, you know, maybe give him the Most Improved Player Award and not, you know, not everybody has to be in the MVP discussion. I feel that way a little bit about Nate because he's been great. But if we had a real absence of incredible season-long coaching performances elsewhere, then maybe Nate, for me, would be the guy. But, you know, the Monty Williams candidacy, I think, is incredibly strong. Tom Thibodeau's candidacy is incredibly strong. And I think Quinn Snyder's in there as well. Mike Malone. Nate McMillan is in that class. Obviously, he's got kind of a different profile than all the rest because they have been incredible, and it's been something else to see. And I think as good as they've been, if he had gotten them to the top of the East, you know, and I know they're not that far off, but they're a second-tier Eastern Conference right. team, then, you know, if they were up there with the Brooklyns and the Phillies, then yeah, I think it probably would be Nate. But to me, it doesn't quite meet that mark.
He is Sam Amick. I'm the remarkably humble Bill Ryder here on CBS Sports Radio. I'm going to use your insight and your intellect and your experience, Sam, because I think the NBA made a mistake. I think they meant to send it to Ben Ryder. Like, maybe we'll just let some baseball writers vote this year. But I have a vote again. The vote has come back to me. If you love something, set it free. If it comes back to you, love the NBA in return. And I'm not done yet, but watching that game last night, I've been thinking this. I think I'm going to put Chris Paul on my ballot. And I know the numbers don't hold up, but just his presence. Do you want to talk me out of that? Are you on that boat? I know it's further down on the ballot, but feeling like the MVP's done, how are you eyeing 2 through 5?
I'm, again, recency bias. Part of calling Draymond Green, and I've done this a couple times, to be honest, is like, he likes having this media role, this analyst role that he plays. And so it was almost like, hey, let's talk about my ballot. And I know how subjective you are.
Oh, yeah.
But go ahead and talk to me about Steph and talk to me about yourself for Defensive Player of the Year. But even independent of that, to me, Steph, I got Jokic number one for sure. I might put Steph number two. I've got Giannis there. I have Embiid there. And to me, the Chris Paul question – comes down to Chris and Luka. And Luka started slow. The Mavs have been very hot lately. Luka's been tremendous. You know, if you break it down from a number standpoint, there's no contest. It's Luka. But Chris's intangibles and the leadership and the tenacity and both ends of the floor, this is a very good defensive team in Phoenix, and he has a ton to do with that. He's the head of the snake, so to speak. So I don't have any problem with Chris being on people's ballots. You know, it's the numbers are tricky because Devin Booker's got a higher usage rate, you know, by a long shot over Chris on that team. And, you know, statistically what he's doing is not exceptional. It's exceptional for his age. But, you know, we've seen what's happened with that team. They're completely different because of his arrival.
Talking to Sam Amick here on the show, whether it's, you know, third team all NBA or it's Coach of the Year, is there a part of the awards ballot for you that has been particularly daunting and particularly difficult as you try to work through it?
I mean, admittedly, I've been, you know that when it's like the weekend and you got chores to do and you just keep putting them off, the all NBA stuff has been that thing for me. Like, mentally, I keep diving into every other award knowing that third team all NBA is going to be really hard, and specifically at the guard spot, you know, like Bradley Beal has become this guy who is just perpetually, on the brink of making it, not making it, which is crazy to say about a guy that's almost going to be the league leader in scoring. It's going to be second this year, I think. But, you know, the guard spot is hard. Trae Young comes to mind, where what Trey's done has been incredible, but I could absolutely see a lot of people, and I don't even know ultimately for me if like where Trey's going to be, but I could see Trey not being on people's ballots. So I think that's tough. In terms of the individual awards, I have a lot of clarity about the winners. I think, like you alluded to with MVP, it's more so, okay, how does the rest of the ranking look? Like Defensive Player of the Year, I got Rudy Gobert. And I'd be curious, I know we're kind of going freestyle here, but, you know, I don't know how you see that race, because after Rudy, who for me is the guy, you know, I think there's quite a few guys you could get into.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it feels like the top of the ballots feel like most improved player is pretty clear, that gentleman in New York, yeah. And MVP, I think we know who that is, and I'm with you on Gobert. And then it gets really tough. And even for me, just personally, Sam Amick from The Athletic, Coach of the Year is not set, because it feels like Monty Williams, but what Thibodeau's done is incredible, and it's not like Quinn Snyder's been a bum. I mean, it's hard.
Well, and there's very different stories, Bill. Like I've said this before, but with Quinn's not going to win. But my argument for him being top three would be, you have to look beyond the scope of this season. And this is, you and I connect on this level. This is the writer part of me, and the idea that I wrote about that Jazz team last March, and we had kind of a definitive story about how they were on the brink of the division. And, you know, we had used the word unsalvageable from a source to describe the relationship between Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell. And to their credit, you know, they showed that person wrong. They showed a lot of people wrong. And what they've done to go from being at the center of the shutdown of the NBA in the middle of a pandemic to not fracturing and then staying together, losing in the playoffs the way they did, and, you know, after being up 3-1, surviving all that stuff, Quinn Snyder's got everything to do with the personal dynamics that survived. And I think, you know, that sort of a thing is tough to quantify, but for me, he's part of the candidacy for him. So I think he's there. But even the Malone one, somebody this morning texted me about Michael, and it's like, you know, you lose Jamal Murray, you lost Will Barton for a long time, you're integrating Aaron Gordon. They've been through a lot, and that team just kept going and going and going, and has been pretty defiant. And so I think Michael's done a great job too.
I agree. And he's a tough one for that third spot. And I'm probably not going to put Doc Rivers on the ballot, but I'm not comfortable enough to actually lock that into my own mind yet.
Overlooking him though. He's been great.
Yeah, he's been great.
And that's a group that, like, we could go all day on this, but that's a group that was, you know, they were like the kids that just were underperforming, so to speak, and you bring a new teacher in and now everybody's got, you know, A's and B's. And that's the reality of that situation. Joel Embiid's game evolved, and Doc had everything to do with that. He got his butt down on the post more than before, and just, you know, got the best out of a lot of different guys, brought his son-in-law into the mix, you know, with Seth Curry and the way he's impacted them. So a ton of good coaching this year.
Sam Amick, I've really enjoyed the conversation. I'm going to lean into my humility. You're right. I don't celebrate it enough. I'm too humble to celebrate my own humility. But I'm going to work on it. As always, my friend, great work. How much are you, this last one, I know we got to let you go. How much do you think you'll be on the road this postseason as the world certainly starts to look like some version of normal might return?
I don't know, man. We can hear the huff. Like, it's driving me crazy. The lack of certainty, you know, and again, I told you, I complained a little bit in the column today. Like, we don't have any clarity whatsoever about access, and you know, and there's, I'm a little skeptical that things might not change in terms of, you know, I think the fans realize this, but to this point, we continue to talk to coaches and players strictly over Zoom or like phone conversations like the one I just had. And so I don't know. I mean, if that doesn't change, then is it worth it to get on a plane and go watch a game in an arena and then sit on the laptop to talk to everybody? It's an unprecedented type of environment. I think I'll be at the NBA finals no matter what the access looks like, but before that, I'm really not sure.
Yeah, I'm having the exact same. I mean, I think, not that anybody cares, but I might spend my whole time in New York because CBS Sports HQ is based there. And then if I want to, drop down to a, it's just, everything is still weird. What remains true, Sam, is how good you are at your job, loving the work, appreciate the time. And I guess maybe in July, I'll see you at the NBA Finals, if not sooner.
Sounds good, my friend. And you are the most humble person I know. Don't let anybody tell you different.
Thank you. It's hard to celebrate that because of my humility, but I'm going to work on it.
All right, buddy. Be good.
See you, buddy. Bye. Sam Amick on the show. Sam_Amick. And on that note, we're going to take this show based in humility, Writer Than You, my name basically saying I'm smarter than everybody, and keep it rolling next year with Bum of the Week on CBS Sports Radio.
Hallelujah, I'm a bum.
All he's doing is a whole lot of damn nothing.
I'm a bum.
You rotten bum!
I'm a bum.
They're a bunch of bums.
I'm a bum, I'm a bum, I'm a bum.
Who's the bum this week? Let's find out on Writer Than You on CBS Sports Radio.
Not really, not to like brag or anything, but I'm like, I'm really good at this game.
Then he tried to trip a guy. I mean, like, what are we talking? So James Harden's nominated. Not to brag. I'm really not to brag. Cool. That's great. Has anyone ever said not to brag and then said anything that's not a brag? The other day, I walked up to somebody. I go, not to brag. But I know Andrew Bogish. You know why? I'm bragging. Dwight Howard is nominated. Don't be a fake tough guy. Everybody in the league knows. By the way, Udonis Haslam's a nice guy. I mean, I covered him for a year, and interesting guy, good player. That's a legit tough guy. That's not a fake tough guy. That's like a nice enough, like all real tough guys, right? We can do whatever we're going to do, but if you want to go to that place, he'll like, okay, let's go there. Dwight Howard. So corny. Dwight Howard. Did you see Dwight Howard's life flash before his eyes yesterday? Because he did. Yeah, Haslam got kicked out in 3 minutes. But also Dwight Howard stopped being a man after 3 minutes of a basketball game. So, like, both of those things kind of occurred. Looked like Haslam was going to put his finger up his nose and just rip his face off, didn't it? Face Off, the sequel. I'm nominated for losing in 10. I actually didn't lose. I lost a tiebreaker to my buddy Don, who called in yesterday, and then I'm up 5-3 in the second set. But I had him. And he's nominated for being a luck box. What'd you practice the shot where it hits the net and trickles over 7 times in a row? I've never seen someone hit so many frame winners. Literally broke his strings on a. And I think I'm nominated again for complaining about it. But whatever, luck box. I hope the guys are listening. David Griffin, the GM of the Pelicans, is nominated not just for his job performance, but also for his job performance. Bob Baffert for, cancel culture. I'm getting canceled. Cool, man. That's great. Sounds like somebody to quote Kanye, gets caught at the Gap stealing clothes and gets fired. Are you canceling me? Sure. You're fired. Can't steal the pants. Hey, Bob. Fair play is kind of important. And Urban Meyer. God, this is really hard. Let's give Tim Tebow a contract. I mean, to be fair, man, has you ever seen a better tight end in college history than Tim Tebow? Oh, that's right. He played a different position. Excuse me. Little mistake there. Either you guys want to stump Andrew Bogish or Tom DiBenedetto for any of these fine... Literally, you could nominate everybody. Everybody on here could win. I'm going to cross me and my buddy off. Because that match isn't decided yet.
I think Urban should get America's vote here. I mean, I can't believe we're doing this again. I can't believe that we are once again on this Tebow train. For whatever reason, I don't get it. I don't understand it. If it works, then shame on all of us and the 5 tight ends in front of him on this depth chart. But I just can't believe this is actually happening.
I love the if it. You're such a nice person, Andrew Bogish. Your if it works is the same thing where you're one of 11 people who show up to your buddy's 7th marriage, and you're willing to be like, well, if it works, and we're like, it's not going to work.
Maybe she's the one. You don't know. He's got to try.
She's 20. He's 70. It's not going to work.
Opposites attract.
That's a good note. I mean, maybe. Tom, do you want to stump for anybody?
I mean, the best part of the Urban thing, I think it was the Chris Collinsworth podcast. He goes on there and he tries to act like it wasn't him. Like, I wasn't at the workout. You know, yeah. Like, it wasn't me. He impressed them. They called me up afterwards and were all blown away by how great. I mean, like, come on, man. Like, all right, fine. You want to give your son, quote unquote, a chance. That's one thing. But don't act like it's not you. So I got to go Urban, too.
Yeah, the whole nepotism. It feels like nepotism, doesn't it? Even though they're not technically.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say, though, he does look really jacked right now. Tebow looks like he's in amazing shape. I don't doubt that. But, I mean, still.
The thing is, I was unfair to nepotism. This is incompetence, and it's not fair to, you know, just because you're.
No one's ever been unfair to nepotism before.
First. It's a first. All right. Man, I feel like James Harden just keeps skating by, right? Like, every time Harden's like, not bum of the week, let's have another donut. Hot now, Krispy Kreme.
We all know it's coming. We all know it's coming. We're waiting on it.
That's the other thing.
Not like, here yet.
How many times have we just celebrated this guy and then the postseason happens and they win some series against, you know, the JV team from Dubuque, Iowa, you know, from Loras College. And he's like, yeah, I'm not going to lie. I'm really good at this game. And then in the second or third round, he just has to wear an adult diaper because of his play. And it's just like, okay, I guess he's bum of the week. You know, it's just, I guess. Yeah, I mean, bad news, we lost. Good news, got a brand new sponsorship with the adult diaper company. So that's, you know, I got that going for me. And on my deathbed, I'll achieve total consciousness. So I got that going for me. Oh, my God. All right, Urban Meyer. Urban mired in your own arrogance and incompetence. I can't believe these are real words. How are we not in the weirdest timeline? You made Tim Tebow, tight end in the National Football League in 2021. Urban, this is the first of many. Maybe it's the third of many. I can't keep track. Congratulations. Get used to it. You're the bum of the week, bro.
That's your bum of the week.
I detest you!
On Writer Than You.
I mean, how long is it going to be before Tebow goes in when he's not supposed to and some linebacker just decides, I'm going to take the penalty. I'm going to take the fine. I'm gonna end him. I'm just going to end his career on this hit right here. Week three?
You know, it wasn't me. We've decided to start Timmy, tight end. You know, he really impressed the guys. Urban, what about the reports that everyone in the locker room hates him and thinks he sucks? You know, I can't. You know, when I was in college, this didn't happen. You know, people talking to you guys is ridiculous. Grown men being able to speak to reporters. How does the draft? Anyone know how the draft works? It's like Ted Lasso. I don't understand why that's offsides. It's offsides, sir. No, I honestly don't understand. Can you explain the offsides rule to me? Can someone explain the NFL to Urban? Maybe it'll get easier.
Wait, 2 feet? 2 feet in bounds.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that week three game, too. I mean, isn't that when his supposed, like, pension would vest?
Yeah.
So that's a big week. If he doesn't make the team, okay, fine. Urban, you gave your quote unquote son a shot, and then you were reasonable and you cut him. But if he's still on the team in week three,
he's not cutting him before he gets fully vested in the pension.
Oh no, that's another reason why he deserves bum of the week.
Yeah. By the way, a lot of people are trying to grind, right? The NFL's like life. There are various levels. We might pay attention to people at the top of the ladder or maybe the very very bottom, because they're interesting stories, but there's people in the middle, and that's someone else who doesn't have those games. What a bum. Urban Meyer, what a bum. Bogus, I'm so excited about the haiku. Do you want some, like, poetry music? Like, na-na-na-na. Oh!
Yeah, no.
Yeah, this is it.
Say no to this?
No, you got it. Reading the update, Bogus succeeds.
The drought continues for the Sacramento Kings.
Rebound grab by Anderson. Anderson to Morant. Morant up ahead, Brooks. Brooks in the lane. Lays it up. Lays it in. Strong move. Dylan Brooks. A great feed by Ja Morant. 114-110. A minute to go.
That was Eric Castleton on Grizzlies Radio. The Kings knocked from contention with a 116-110 loss to Dylan Brooks and the Grizz. It is 15 consecutive seasons now without the playoffs for Sacramento. That matches the longest drought in NBA history. The loss also gives the final spot in the West play-in to the Spurs. The Suns, 118-117 decision over the Blazers, leaves them a game behind the Jazz for number one in the West. The loss drops Portland to number six, just a half game ahead of the Lakers. The Clippers beat the Hornets, 113-90, to maintain their one-game lead on the Nuggets for third in the West. Denver, a 114-103 winner in Minnesota. In the East, the Sixers lost in Miami, 106-94. The Bucks outscored the Pacers, 142-133. And the Hawks down the Magic, 116-93, to remain in the four spot. The Seattle Mariners, almost no hit for the second consecutive home game.
Line drive, base hit center field.
Looked like it went right off the top of the glove of Rosario. Seven innings, no hit baseball.
That's from Bally Sports Great Lakes. Cleveland righty Zach Plesac denied history by J.P. Crawford's single leading off the eighth. They settled, Cleveland did, for a 4-2 win over the Mariners. Gleyber Torres is the first Yankee player, the eighth total, to test positive in their COVID outbreak. Giancarlo Stanton trying to push through.
Interesting times, you know, as the past year or so has been. So you just got to try to keep the tunnel vision.
It
when
didn't
you get
work
out
last
there.
Night. The Yanks failed to sweep the Rays 9-1. The Astros outlasted the Rangers 4-3-11. The winning run scoring on a wild pitch. And the Marlins beat the Diamondbacks 5-1 to split their four-game series. New Dolphins wideout Jaylen Waddle has signed his first NFL contract. The Colorado Avalanche closed the regular season on a five-game win streak, 5-1 in L.A. last night. That earns them home ice throughout the postseason. And round two of the Byron Nelson in Texas, Wyndham Clark and K.H. Lee share the lead at 11-under, one shot better than Jordan Spieth. J.J. Spawn, who shared the overnight lead with Spieth at 9-under, tees off in about 2 hours from now. Bill, back to you.
Andrew Bogus, thank you. I really dug the poetry portion of that. And if you ever want to push that to the whole update, if you want to just, oh, wow. Leaning into the poetry, Andrew Bogus excels.
The music was my muse.
Is it just, anyone else want to paint some clouds and some ocean views right now?
I was thinking nap, but yeah. I'll do that too.
I was thinking nap too.
We're all thinking nap.
Bogus, have a good weekend, buddy.
You too, guys.
At Andrew Bogus on Twitter. Let's do buy or sell next here on CBS Sports Radio.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Writer Than You.
Milwaukee Brewers breakout righty Corbin Burnes set the record for strikeouts without a walk to start a season yesterday, extending the mark to 58 before issuing his first walk of the year in the fifth inning and a 2-0 loss to the St. Louis Cardinals. Burnes needed three strikeouts to pass the previous record of 51, which was held by Kenley Jansen, of course, of the Dodgers back in 2017. By getting to 58 Ks, he also set the overall record for strikeouts without a walk at any point in a season, although that might get broken again immediately, even as soon as Monday, as Garrett Cole of the Yankees also has an active streak at 56 Ks without a walk and counting. These are amazingly impressive numbers, but buy or sell, knowledge of a pitcher-friendly baseball for this season makes these records hard to appreciate.
I do buy.
Buy.
Something's going on. Something is off. And we've discussed this. Baseball's got to find a way, and Theo Epstein's trying to work on this experimentally in some lower leagues, to not have every outcome be home run, base on ball, or strikeout.
It's only getting worse.
Yeah. No, I mean, and some of it, I'm sure, is just the knowledge teams have and what they're trying to build. I mean, they're trying to launch angles and the value of a base on ball, coupled with the pitcher's ability to get spin rates, and however they're doing that, whatever's going on. It is. They're going to have to find a way to cheat code the cheat code because it's not entertaining.
The Pac-12 surprised the sports world yesterday by naming MGM Resorts International President George Klyavkov as their next commissioner, replacing the heavily and often criticized Larry Scott. The hire is an aggressive move by the conference to increase their profile and return to the same reputation level and earning potential as the more powerful Power 5 conferences. But it also surprised college sports insiders who were anticipating a more traditional and less boom or bust selection. Buy or sell the Pac-12's outside-the-box mentality in hiring their new commissioner.
It's really tough. Hard to make an evaluation of an executive. Don't know anything about how the guy's going to transition to this job. Impressive guy, but sometimes it works. The analogy I'll use is agents get hired a lot in the NBA to be
GMs. Some are massively successful. Some are disasters. It's hard to know. I'll buy it. Let's be a little optimistic.
Buy.
I mean, one thing that I was thinking about as I was consuming all this news about the Pac-12 is, and maybe I'm misstating this because Chicago's a major market and obviously Northwestern's there, but the Pac-12 is a major conference in which its two most important teams, or maybe two of its most three important teams, play in Los Angeles, California. There's no college teams in New York City. What's the Rutgers? Is that the closest? Which it doesn't even count. I mean, the Big Ten barely counts as a Big Ten team. Sorry, Rutgers. I mean, there's so much untapped potential. And Stanford. Now, Stanford is not in San Francisco, but it is Bay adjacent, sort of like Northwestern, really. A little bit, little, you know, a little bit further away. But I mean, there's just there. The Pac-12 should be a behemoth, and it's not. For all the, they have major markets that are tied to their relevant teams, and that is not always true in college athletics because they're obviously in college towns.
So Minnesota Timberwolves owner Glenn Taylor has now reached a verbal agreement on a $1.5 billion sale of the team to former baseball star Alex Rodriguez and mogul Mark Lurie, apparently closing this deal after the initial 30-day deadline to reach an agreement passed earlier this week. Taylor previously said the deal was contingent on Lurie and Rodriguez keeping the team in Minnesota, although the Target Center does have a buyout of $50 million that could get the team out of their lease, which runs through 2035. Lurie and Rodriguez, by the way, confirmed that they are 50-50 partners in the project. Buy or sell, A-Rod will try to move the Timberwolves.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, this is how it... God, he'd be so hated. But the thing is, he's already hated. What he covets is love. I want to make a J-Lo joke so badly. I'm not going to. I'm going to hold back. So, yeah, you might be hated in Minneapolis, but if you take that team to Seattle, guess who's going to love you? Seattle. If you take that team, you know, insert it. I'm going to buy it. I'm going to buy it.
Buy.
I mean, who? He's not going to. And I love that part of the country. I'm from there. But he doesn't care if people in Minneapolis hate him if he doesn't plan to ever step foot in Minnesota.
The 8th seed in the West comes down to Warriors Grizzlies on Sunday night. They both play tonight. Those games won't matter. It's all about that game on Sunday night. Buy or sell, the Warriors beat the Grizzlies to lock down the 8th seed on Sunday night.
I'm going to buy it because of what that organization's been through, but it's one game. Literally anything can happen. I really hope they win. I want Warriors Lakers so badly in that play-in. All right, thanks for hanging out with us on this Friday. Appreciate Sam Amick. Thank you to Andrew Bogish, the update maestro and budding poet. Thank you to executive producer Tom DiBenedetto. Appreciate, as always, his hard work. I'm Bill Ryder. The show is Ryder Than You. We appreciate you. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you back here again Monday on CBS Sports Radio.